Welcome on into the fourth and final hour of the program. Chris Thomas, Night Turtle, with you weeknights here, 6 to 10 on 92.9 The Game, live from the Kia Studios. Oren, we're going to sort of do the opposite of an exercise we did earlier in the show. I have with me, through the annoying announcer shaking papers into the microphone thing, a list.
A list.
Of questions from the college football weekend. Whereas before, you tossed me some questions.
I did.
About the Atlanta Falcons. Now we're going to discuss some questions that I've come up with about the college football weekend and what's ahead for both of our squads here in the A. First one, let's keep it local.
Let's do.
Concern, and this is what I asked first to Joe DeLeon. Concern over the UGA offense heading into Tennessee week. Now, why even bring this up? Well, yes, they played two cupcakes. Yes, they won both games fairly easily. But the concern about Gunnar Stockton going into the season is there. The running game and the offensive line. This is their first real test, obviously, Oren. So Tennessee has looked great, specifically on offense. Do you have any concern about the UGA offense heading into Tennessee?
I do.
Oh.
I do.
Oh.
There were some moments on Saturday, in particular before the half, when UGA couldn't gain a foot and a half, basically.
You're right.
To get a touchdown and score, and you saw the anger from Kirby right before the half with his team saying you couldn't get this much. You couldn't get you couldn't move the ball that far.
What kind of bull crap was that?
So I hope that this is the week that the short yardage woes are finally cured. I hope this
you think
is the,
that's more of a running back problem or an offensive line problem?
A little bit of both. It's
I was told the offensive line was fixed.
They got to fix, you know, hey, still got to move bodies up front. Still got to move bodies up front. You're getting one of your starters back this week under the screen. Juan Gaston is a little murky as to if we'll see him this weekend. But that being said, I do think that Georgia will be able to do some things offensively versus Tennessee. Tennessee's going to be down their two top corners. So if this was ever the week where Gunner
Noah Thomas and Zachariah Branch
and those guys and Colby Young and London Humphreys, all those guys.
If there was a
week for them to get right, it's this week against the Tennessee team that I think they can do some things in the back. Now, Tennessee does have really good defense, though, but I think this is a week where maybe there's a couple big plays in the passing game that haven't been there before that you can get.
Is Oklahoma for real? After beating Michigan.
Hold up. We got to find out here just a second. Because their schedule the next few weeks is where it starts to get, like, really, really, really real.
You talk about the Dogs?
No, I'm talking about Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma. I think they are, because I think it all starts with the quarterback. I think
John Mateer
looks –
he's a dude.
It's funny. Our buddies over at Bet Online that always send me emails with odds – had him going into last week as the new Heisman favorite.
So they have Temple this week. Not great. They have Kent State in a couple of weeks. Not great. Sandwiched between that, though, is their conference schedule with Auburn. Then they run consecutively with Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Missouri, and LSU.
Ooh, there could easily
so
be.
You
wow,
end the
that,
season.
Wow.
You end the season with six teams right now ranking the top 25.
Oh, my goodness.
So people talk about
– they may be for real, but it may not matter.
Yeah, we're going to find out very, very quickly in a couple of weeks when they play Auburn just how real they are. And then 2 weeks later, we're going to find out how really real they are in the Red River Shootout game. And then after that, they don't face, as of right now, a team that is not a top 25 team the rest of the season.
That is brutal. I thought – Florida may have had the toughest schedule, but
Florida's is tougher, yeah. I would say, yeah. But Florida might have a bit of a reprieve, but Florida just comes a little bit earlier. I think the next 5 weeks from Florida are basically the weeks after for Oklahoma. But sub out like Texas for Georgia, and then you got Florida schedule.
I think if Oklahoma goes 9-3, is that a good season?
That's a really good season.
I think that's a good season.
9-3 gets you on the outside of that playoff talk, I think. I'd have to go.
So you think there'll be enough 10-2 teams?
Yeah. Oh, but it's that 9. Who are those three that you lost to? And who are those nine that you
beat? Yeah, because if it's LSU.
Like if two of those wins are against Texas and LSU, different conversation.
Yeah.
A different conversation you're going to have about that 9-3 at the end of the season for Oklahoma.
It's tough. Next up, Bama blasts UL Monroe, but they need to show up versus a big opponent. Again, there's really – again, we talked to Joe DeLeon about this last hour. There's not much you can glean from it because of the opponent, but at least they didn't choke. At
no.
least, like, I guess is what you can say. And they look thoroughly dominant. I mean, really thoroughly dominant.
They did.
They didn't
did
against
what you
Florida
did to
State.
Do. You put that game away early. You didn't leave any doubt. It was what, a 28-6 game or whatever it was at the end of the first quarter. So you put UL, 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. You did exactly what you needed to do. You made it not a contest very, very early and alleviated any doubts of anybody that was there that this is going to be a down week for Bama. They have Wisconsin coming up this week.
2-0
Wisconsin. They're going to be in Bama, so a tough matchup. Then they got a bye. Then they stroll over to Athens.
What happened to Luke Fickell?
NIL. I don't – maybe just the fact that maybe Wisconsin's in a place where they can't compete with the rest of the teams in the Big Ten. They just kind of got left behind.
That'd really be like, left behind.
Really left behind.
Even Nebraska looks like they may have figured something out.
It just works for some schools, and some schools they just cannot navigate it. And you see the top half of the Big Ten now is where it is, and Wisconsin is where it is in the bottom half of the Big Ten. So, but yeah, Alabama gets Georgia 2 weeks after Wisconsin. So, like Oklahoma, we're going to find out very early just how real Alabama is.
Does Notre Dame crumble under the pressure? And A&M ruins their 2025 season 3 weeks in. I think there's a chance. They really – I don't know about the offense. I know about the running back, but I don't know about the offense as a whole.
It's still – we don't know what C.J. Carr is yet.
But that's the problem.
Yeah, and exactly. At this point in the season, an identity needs to be had at that quarterback position. And – even the last couple years, you know, Riley Leonard wasn't the best passer in the world, but you knew what you had in him. And when he didn't give you the pass,
that guy had guts, man.
Moxie guts. Really, and he ran the football very, very well at that quarterback position. I don't know what C.J. Carr is yet. The same way, bring it locally here too, I don't know what Gunnar Stockton is yet. So
hopefully good.
Your hope. That's the hope, yeah. But until that quarterback position sort of gets established. Now, granted, though, just like with Georgia, they can lean heavily on that running game. Like Jeremiah Love is ridiculous. So they can lean heavy on that running game until maybe C.J. Carr figures it out. But
let me ask you this. If Gunnar Stockton goes, I don't know, 17 of 28 for 168 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and Georgia wins 21-17. How do you feel?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that because I know that's a tough defense in Tennessee, and that's a big win in a hostile environment, too, for Gunnar Stockton. So it's – I mean, Neyland's not an easy place for any opposing team to play. No opposing quarterback.
So no style. You don't care about style points.
Not so much this weekend, no. Like I said, there might be opportunities in the passing game for a couple of big plays. That I'd like to see. But in terms of, like, this is going to be one of those – I mean, the second half of last year's game was ugly. The first half of last year's game was ugly. I mean, these are two teams that – you know, they go at it. It's very, very, very physical. Tennessee has defined itself now. You maybe had that outlier year with 2022 where they were number one in the CFP rankings at one point, and then Georgia handled them that week that they were number one. But this Tennessee team has become defined by two things, the toughness that it has on defense and its running game. They want to pound the ball up front, and they want to stop you from pounding the football on the other side of the ball, too. So if it's a slugfest, I'm okay with that.
Was that Joe Milton?
Joe
quarterback?
No, that wasn't Joe Milton. That was Hendon Hooker.
Hendon Hooker. Okay. They're both floating around still.
Hendon was, he got
He went to the Lions. He's somewhere else.
Hendon got cut, and I think Joe
was with the
Cowboys.
Yeah. That dude's got a...
He had a rocket arm.
Yeah,
dude.
Unbelievable. All right, before we get out of here, Arch. Let's just... Because we have
Arch,
to.
Arch, question mark.
Because we have to. I mean, this weekend's not going to be a thing. What are they, have UTEP this weekend? But are you a little bit more eased with what you saw the big game, even though it was against an inferior opponent?
No, because I wasn't one of those people coming into the season that had anointed this guy as the next greatest thing in college football history. No idea what this dude was. And then the limited time you saw last year, it was against Cupcakes. In the Georgia game, the plays he got in there just weren't great. If this dude was as good as everyone said he was, he would have been the starting quarterback last year for the entire season for Texas, not just for the limited time that somebody was hurt. It seems to be the theme for these questions. Another starting quarterback, but Arch is a bit different because we should know what Arch is. We should know what Arch is at this point. He's got enough stock, enough game experience to kind of, but it just.
Well, here's the thing, and it's hard. The memory gets a little foggy. Did Cam Newton, Peyton Manning, Tim Tebow, did all those guys, like, no doubt 1,000% right out the chute? I think most of them you'd say yes.
Tebow was, I'd say, of those guys.
Because he got in first with Chris Leak as like a specialty.
Yeah, of all those guys, I would say Cam was sort of the most, from the jump, sort of a sure thing.
Baker.
Well, Baker, it took him a couple years. Yeah. He had to leave Texas Tech to go to Oklahoma.
Kyler Murray.
Peyton wasn't even the second string. He was the third string. And it took a couple guys getting hurt before he started to play as a freshman. Kyler, same thing too. A&M guy that had to transfer. So just Jalen Hurts, he didn't quite know from the jump who he was going to be either. Just I don't know. So
I guess the point is there's a sample size where we just listed some of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time, and a lot of them had a learning curve.
They did.
That's the point.
They had learning curves, though, I think, earlier in their – Arch is a third-year junior now. And those learning curves, I think, for the other quarterbacks, they came much earlier, I guess, in their collegiate careers than Arches, who we have not quite seen yet. But like I said, I wasn't anointing this guy. I thought he'd be better, but, you know, Feinbaum was calling this guy the greatest SEC or college quarterback since Tim Tebow played before he took a snap this season.
You can't say that with the season Joe Burrow had.
So
Joe Burrow had the greatest collegiate season of all time.
Statistically, yes, he had the greatest.
He threw 60 touchdowns and won a national title.
5,000 yards, yeah.
Come on, Paul.
It was ridiculous.
That, Paul's better than that.
But it just, I mean, and he also was in a state that had Cam Newton win a national championship as an undefeated, wire-to-wire, undefeated national championship. So, yeah, maybe it turns around. This is the week it turns around for him, and we just kind of just – it's an upward trajectory after this week. But what I've seen right now, he and Cade Klubnik have been probably the two guys coming in with the most hype that have been the most disappointing a starting quarterback.
Oh, Cade Klubnik for sure. I think he only has 2 touchdowns and 2 picks on the season with a couple of games that he needed to show a big in, specifically in week 1. All right, good job. Those were my biggest questions going into week 3 of the college football season. We'll continue to break it down all week long for you here on 92.9 The Game. Let's get back to some Falcons conversation. Our insider Joe Patrick stops by next. What's going on with the kicker situation? Let's find out next together. Not only does that mean Joe Patrick is here, but he's in studio. How about that? Live and in living color, our Falcons insider for his weekly visit here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. And Joe, so much to get into, so little time.
There is?
I wish there wasn't, man. I really wish this was just like, yeah, you know, the Falcons won 30 to 17.
Yeah, yeah.
And Michael Penix Jr. shined in the defense, and Pierce had a sack, and Walker had, you know, eight pressures. And
He's going to lead the league this year, you know? Lewis Riddick, his prediction was spot on.
All right. Let me start here. After watching what Minnesota did last night, coming back, McCarthy caught fire. Defense played much better in the second half. And then watching what we did on Sunday, how do you feel about this game? Did your mood, mindset change about this game at all after taking in both the Falcons and then the Vikings?
It's funny you said that, because I actually do have thoughts on kind of the way that I think this game is going to go versus the way that I think lines, like odds makers, are going to have it go. And I'm probably more optimistic than you're going to be wanting to hear from me here, Chris. Because
no, I just want the truth, man.
I'm not a believer in J.J. McCarthy at this point. I think Kevin O'Connell did a great job with him last night. I think Kevin O'Connell is the best play caller in the NFL right now. And I think that because that Minnesota Vikings have Kevin O'Connell, he gives them a chance to win basically every single game because what they have on defense, in addition to his play calling. But I'm just not impressed with J.J. McCarthy, and I think that this Falcons defense, while, yes, they didn't really get home on a lot of sacks that you would have wanted to see, I think they did show, like, the green shoots that you wanted to see, especially from these young players that can give a young quarterback making his second start in the NFL, like J.J. McCarthy will be, I think they can give him fits and potentially get him to turn the ball over once or twice. That will be great. Now, I think on the other hand, there are some very legitimate concerns with what you saw from the offensive line and how well that's going to be able to improve when you get into a really hostile, maybe the loudest environment in the NFL in Minnesota next week. So,
and the Vikings have a much better defensive front.
No doubt.
Than the Bucs.
No doubt.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't have Vita Vea, but they do have like just a lot of like dynamic players along that front that are going to cause problems for this team. And so they're going to have to make some adjustments with what they do in the run game, especially, and try to and figure that out. I don't think it's going to get any easier this week, but I just feel like defensively they can, you know, we talked about, you know, this defense maybe was never going to be one that kept points off the board to a great extent, but could at least turn teams over, make some game-changing plays in that respect. And I think that this is a week where we can potentially really see that come to fruition.
How much longer until we get this kicker thing figured out?
Well, hopefully it starts getting figured out this week. I mean, I would be really surprised if Younghoe Koo is kicking for this team in Minnesota. And if John Parker Romo, the new practice squad kicker, who I expect to be elevated onto the active roster to the, you know, to the game day roster on Sunday, if he makes his kicks, he's going to be this team's kicker. Now, whether he actually does that, you know, we have to wait and see. Maybe a little silver lining here is that he has experience kicking in Minnesota, where he kicked for four games last year. It was 11 for 12 for them, and that's where they will obviously be this weekend, but you never know. It's always kind of scary when you have to get in bed with a new kicker, but you know, sometimes you got to get in bed with a new partner every once in a while. You know, things grow stale, things grow old, you know, things start to go awry, and you gotta find that life source again.
Don't tell me that. I just celebrated my 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't tell me that.
1 year with a great kicker is, you know, things are going great.
Well, the Falcons had that with young Waku.
Right. And can I say, like, it's tough with Koo because and just kicking in general, it's such a psychological hurdle that he has to clear when you start getting into this rut. It's not just about, you know, a kicker's talent and that talent eventually coming through, because you need him to make kicks this week. Like you can't just wait for a kicker to get right. You've got to find that solution. And I think that, you know, that's the problem with signing a kicker, any kicker really, but, you know, Younghoe Koo was signed to a multi-year contract, and now that money feels like it's, you know, a little bit down the drain. It's not obviously a ton of money in comparison to other players, but still, this is a team that can use every dollar on the salary cap they can with the mistakes that have been made on that front. So it'll be interesting to see how John Parker Romo gets on, but as long as he can just make the kicks, that's all this team needs. And like, not even anything special. If he can just got to be basically perfect inside of 50 yards, which is pretty standard for an NFL kicker these days.
Just better than what Riley Patterson was at the end of the year.
Yeah.
By the way, when Koo, here's how you knew the situation is what it is. When he spoke to the media and started getting all technical about his kicks and the turf and the placement, like, you sunk your own battleship there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I get it because, like, he's asked why. Like he's asked why and he's trying to give an answer, but still it never looks good. You know, what fans want is some good old-fashioned self-flagellation there. You know, you just got to whip yourself on the back and say, you know, I did a bad job, bad job.
Here's my next thing. Really didn't love Zach Robinson's game plan, especially in short yardage.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, why, like, I was just thinking as these plays were developing, like, first of all, why are you running outside with Bijan Robinson to try to get 1 yard?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you?
Because they can't run inside.
Yeah, but the thing is, but then you take Tyler Allgeier and you try to run him inside and you get stuff. So what did you make of the game plan?
I'm with you, Chris, and I've got the questions lined up ready for him tomorrow. You know, it's funny that the Falcons have been doing media. The coordinators are going at the same time as open locker room. And typically we like to be in open locker room because you want to talk about you want to hear from the players more than anybody else. But tomorrow, I think there's pertinent questions for Zach Robinson. The thing that frustrates me, Chris, is it's the pistol and shotgun setups in like fourth and one or short. You know, you need inches and you're snapping the ball back 4 yards. And, you know, and that makes it difficult. By the way, it's not just the fact that the ball is going away from the line of scrimmage. It starts with the center. The center has to make an accurate snap to the quarterback. And so if he's doing that, he's not able to fire off as quickly against those big guys up front that he has to move off the spot in order for the team to successfully run up the middle in those situations. And so I think that's why we've seen, you know, several times, like Drew Dahlman, for example, last year, obviously had issues with the snap when they were in shotgun in some of those situations. And I even saw some, you know, obviously none to the extent that Dahlman's were at times last year, but they were not always accurate. And I give the center some leeway. I did play it in high school, so maybe that's one of the reasons why.
Well,
but
you got your
it's tough
it's, bona fides.
When you're having to snap the ball back like that and fire off the ball and try to move a Vita Vea, it's like you're asking him to do an impossible task.
Well, the Falcons also ask a lot of climbing to the next level, taking on blocks from linebackers, so totally understand what you're saying. Level of concern, Mooney and London.
London, I'm concerned. I think Mooney's going to – I would expect him to return this week, frankly. I mean, we've seen him. He's been practicing now for a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks since he first got back on the grass. And I definitely – you know, he was playing last week. He said that he was not being held back. We obviously can't watch the full practices like we were during training camp. We only see the first 15 minutes. But what I have seen in those 15 minutes, they've been running some drills where they just literally throw bombs to the guys. It's a fun one to watch because the receivers just run 50 yards and Penix throws them a bomb downfield. And Darnell Mooney's running super fast, and you would expect that. You know, it was a shoulder injury. It's not like it was a lower body thing. So
it sounds like a clear for contact.
Exactly,
situation.
Exactly. It sounds like that. And he was specifically asked that when he, you know, finally talked to media last week, and he didn't suggest that was part of it, but also I don't know how much you can actually believe a player talking about an injury situation. So, it sounds to me like it's once he's cleared medically, then he's going to be full go, which I would expect this week.
Talking with our insider, Joe Patrick here. Make sure you check out the podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. I know some people are saying no big deal. Some people are saying big deal. One sack total on Baker without the best left tackle in football. To me, you needed more.
You do need more. I thought that when I rewatched the game this morning, and I felt like the rushers, I felt like they actually had more time to get to the quarterback than they're used to. Like, I felt like in Jimmy Lake's system, because they played so much off coverage, they felt like they had to get to the quarterback immediately. And what I saw was Baker Mayfield kind of dropping back and then not having that open guy like he was accustomed to, which was kind of nice. You see him patting the ball a little bit in the pocket, but it felt like the rushers were in such a rush to get to him, they were leaving him some then open avenues to get out of the pocket. And it almost felt like if they had just kind of been a little bit more patient in their rush lane, he was either going to run right into them or the pocket was ultimately going to collapse around them. So it feels to me like there are some positives there to build off of, but it's just you got to kind of get it all in sequence with the defense at the right time. But I thought it was promising showing defensively, Chris. I mean, like, you know, they were able to at least get pressures. I think they were third in the NFL this week in overall pressure rate. You know, Jeff Ulbrich was also bringing blitzes quite frequently, bringing five. But I thought even those blitzes were effective with either Caden Ellis or Divine Diablo coming up through those A-gaps and creating havoc in the middle of the pocket. So I'm actually pretty optimistic with what they showed on that side of the ball.
Well, highlight Diablo. He gets a gold star.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to give myself a gold star, by the way, too, because I said that I felt like he was a player that nobody was talking about, myself included, by the way, because it's hard to really understand, like, when you're watching training camp practice, like, is the linebacker actually doing a good job? Like, it's hard to see the run fits in general. You don't know what the coverages are. It's hard to know whether they're actually doing their job. But just when you look at him, it's like, wow, that guy looks like a great football player. He's, like, big, long-rangy, strong guy. And then you combine that with the way that Raheem Morris talks about him, not just generally how smart they think he is and all that, but just how impressed that he clearly was with him since he got in, and he showed it. He made some great plays, and he used exactly the kind of tools that we saw, you know, that range to get out in coverage or, you know, put arms up and when he's rushing the passer. I thought it was really good from him.
What did you make of the Rukororo roughing play? It's kind of tough to diagnose, in my opinion. He needs to hold up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I said as much, but he also, like, I don't think he was being egregious either. It was tough.
I agree. And, you know, it was interesting that the refs got together and kind of talked about it for a while before they ultimately, I mean, they threw the flag immediately, but then, like, they kind of debated it. And I kind of thought they may have picked it up because when you do start talking about it, I'm sure that they were talking about how light the contact was, but also they were probably thinking, you know, we might get in trouble by the league if we don't, you know, go ahead and call this. So it was obviously very light. And yeah, it's like, you know, nothing that anybody hasn't heard, but you just can't put that in the ref's hands. You got to make sure that that's just not an option for them to call. So it was a pretty brutal penalty in the context.
Before I let you go, what the hell happened on special teams, man?
That was brutal. I know that obviously the missed field goal and everything gets a lot of play, but also Ku missing the touchdown or the touchback zone, whatever, the landing zone. You had a big punt return that led to a Tampa Bay touchdown. That's basically a turnover. It was a 58-yard punt and a 59-yard return. That's a turnover. And you had another, the last drive of the game when the Bucs needed that field goal, and they ultimately do score a touchdown on it. They give up a big kickoff return to the 37-yard line that sets it up. So in the modern NFL, from there, you only need like 30 yards, and then you're in range. And it just put them under pressure. So, yeah, Marquise Williams, I know that, you know, that was been an emphasis for them this offseason, but they got to get that stuff cleaned up.
All right, Joe, next time we talk, I want to be talking about a dub.
I do, too.
I really do. I
think it's winnable. I mean, I think these are winnable games they got coming up.
It is. I just... What J.J. McCarthy showed me in the fourth quarter yesterday are the exact things that happen at the end of Falcons games. They have a lead, you're winning, you feel good, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it unravels in the most nightmarish way possible.
Mm-hmm. But Penix is showing that he can kind of pull it out of his butt, too.
And that could be the difference. And I thought it was going to be the difference.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. Should have been. Should have been the difference. Should have been the difference.
Because he should have gotten the chance.
Yeah.
And then they should have been able to hopefully win the face-off, get them marched down the field and score. And that would have been all she wrote. But all right, my friend, appreciate you hopping on in studio. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. When we get back, let's hear from Raheem Morris and Young Wei Koo. And we'll put this issue to bed because it's going to be up to them on the field for the rest of the week to decide who gets the kick for the Falcons on Sunday. So until a decision is made, it is out of all of our hands at this point. But let's hear what Raheem and Youngway had to say about the disaster that was Sunday against the Bucs. We'll wrap up a busy, busy Tuesday program when we get back. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you till 10. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until the top of the hour. Oren, before we hear from Raheem Morris and Young Wei Koo, I made a mistake today. And I didn't realize I was making a mistake when I made one.
Uh-oh.
But I guess I did. Certainly heard about it. So the girlfriend asked me, if I was able to take off next Saturday. Unfortunately, I am not. I am working, so I gotta work. Which was fine. That wasn't the issue. But Friday, or maybe it's one of those days in between there, she's going to Six Flags with a couple of friends. Now, here's the thing. Until I was about 18, I loved roller coasters. I did them all. No limitations. Balls to the wall. Loved roller coasters. I went to Six Flags. I went to Busch Gardens. I went to a bunch of different amusement parks. Once I turned about 18, I'll never forget it. I was with some family friends on a vacation to Six Flags. And we went on the then Batman and Robin roller coaster. And I'll never forget it. After I got off that roller coaster, I literally felt like somebody took my insides, put them in a blender, and then just dumped them back in like it was the game operation. And from that point on, I have not been able to do any sort of extreme coaster heights, anything like that. Apparently, through the year plus now of my relationship, my girlfriend didn't really know this about me because we've never been to a theme park together. And apparently, this is a huge thing because she loves roller coasters, loves amusement parks, and is really upset that I don't want to go to Six Flags. I have no reason to go to Six Flags.
Your insides don't want, you don't want your insides to make a return
right.
appearance,
and,
if
and
you
And I said to her, I said, babe, you're going to be with your friends, and I will be spending the majority of my day watching you stand in line and then ride a roller coaster and then move to the next roller coaster. Watch you stand in line and then ride the roller coaster. I said, it just doesn't seem very fun for me. And I just to be honest with you, I'd rather just pass. She didn't like that, Orin. She hit me with the, uh-oh. Well, if it was something you wanted to do, I'd go.
Oh boy. I mean, well, in a sense, you are going. Well, no, you're not going to go. I take that back.
I don't want to go.
You don't want to go.
I have no intention of going. It's just because, like, it's not even like we're going to really be together. She's going to be standing in line.
It's just roller coaster line waiting.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the idiot that's just sitting there waiting. I'm not even waiting to do anything. I'm just waiting for them to get done and move to the next one. And Oren, she didn't take too kindly to that. And I was left there because we rarely, you know, we have our usual, you know, any couple sort of bickering.
Yeah, it's natural, man. It just happens.
But this one hit home for her. This was like a big deal.
Uh-oh.
Because apparently, like, but my counter, and here was my counter, Oren. Here was my counter. I said, but babe, in the year plus we've been together, you've been to exactly one amusement park. And it was when you went to visit your family out of state. You have never suggested we go to an amusement park together. You have never suggested we ride roller coasters together. So how big of a deal could it possibly be? And then you know what she hit me with, Oren?
What's that?
Well, you know, of course, in the future, I want to go to Disney World and I want to go to Universal and I want to ride all the rides. So then this became about future plans and how me not being able to ride all the crazy rides is an issue. So I really buried myself in a deep one today.
So I'm guessing you're going to Six Flags, huh?
No.
Oh, still not going.
No. Why? For what? Pay entrance to an amusement park to watch my girlfriend and her friends stand in line and ride rides. You know, there's not many times where I'd put my foot down. Happy wife, happy life, as they say. She's not my wife, but it's the same principle. And usually I'm just willing to, you know, go along to get along. But this is a whole day thing. They want to get there when it opens, leave when it closes. Like, to do what? For me to do what? Stand there like an idiot. Play a couple of arcade games. Winner a stuffed bunny, I guess.
Yeah. Or you like, oh no, the big things. Walk around with the basketballs. That's what it is.
Ugh. Ugh. So I got myself in trouble today, but Oren, I think I had to stand my ground.
All right.
We'll see how badly this comes back to bite me. Like on a scale of 1 to finding my behind on a curb somewhere.
Standing on business, sir.
Yeah. Again, it's not something I necessarily want to do, but, you know, and I even replied, like, you know, babe, you hate horror movies. I love horror movies. I go to horror movies all the time without you.
Yeah.
Because I know you don't like it, so I don't even try.
Yeah, just because I don't ask, because I just, out of courtesy, yes.
I know you don't want to go. And then I was like, and then you know what I did?
What'd you do?
I doubled down.
Uh-oh.
Like an idiot.
Uh-oh,
like
no,
an
no,
idiot.
No.
I doubled down. I was like, well, you know, Collecticon is this weekend. I wouldn't ask you to go to that.
Oh, gosh.
And she's like, oh, I'd go. I'm like, come on. I set my hook, line, and MFing sinkers. I set myself up for that so badly.
Oh, man.
What a disaster.
I'd go with you to Collecticon. Well, wasn't expecting you to say that one, huh?
Seriously, yeah. You want to go walk around the World Congress Center looking at Pokemon cards? Like, that's what I want to do. You sure that's what you want to do? Of course I'd do it. Ugh. It was a bad scene, Orin. Because we talk every day. Because, you know, I get up. She's a teacher. So we do our daily phone call in the afternoon when she gets home before I leave here. I came into work limping today, man. It was
she got you.
Yeah, that was
doubled up on you there. Toop, toop, toop.
That was a hard L for you, boy, man. But I'm not going to Six Flags.
There you go.
Won't
stand your ground on that one.
Can't do it, won't do it. All right, real quick before we get out of here, let's actually deliver on a promise I made today. Raheem Morris, he confirmed that today they will do what they did. Bring in a kicker for some competition.
Yeah, we got to go out. You know, like it's only, you know, like we always talk about, we always create those competitive moments and find people, whether it be workouts or whatever the case may be. And if we are lucky enough and fortunate enough to sign somebody that looks good enough to come in and compete, that we feel like we do it throughout the week, we possibly can. But we'll keep scouring. And then, like, in the meantime, you know, we got to line up, we got to kick it, we got to make it, and we got to go through our process.
Parker Romo. Get used to that name, Falcons fans. That may be your new kicker for the 2025 season. But Raheem Morris did say, which we all felt because he had a great offseason, that Koo was the guy going into the season.
You know, you always worry about the mental part when you're talking about the kicker, the quarterback, the head coach, and all those things. So, like, yeah, the fact that those things in, that's what the offseason was for, bringing in Lenny, having some competition there. Having those guys in the offseason, Koo doing or having a really great offseason when it came to his body development, his growth, his mentality, his percentage when it came to the kicks, when you guys were out there charting just like us, all looked good. And then for it to show up in the first game, it obviously creates the automatic panic that we're all going to go into, like we're going to do, in order to find out who can come in and help us or whether we can stay the course and still figure out how to get it done.
All right. I mean, again, I think that's fine by Raheem there. What else is he supposed to say? One from Coop before we get out of here. He says, despite everything that happened, he's still confident in himself and his approach.
You know, and mentally, you know, I don't think I'm in a position anything I can't handle. And I feel great and confident as ever. That's not really my thing, you know, to get down like that. Just kind of go out, swing, and be the best version of myself that I know I can be. And I'm just going to do that, you know, starting with practice. And then come Sunday, I'm going to do the same thing.
We'll see. If he's there on Sunday. Ooh. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight Turtle with you each and every weeknight here, 6 to 10 p.m. on 92.9 The Game. Tomorrow we'll shift our focus. Let's talk about specifically what this team needs to do to beat the Minnesota Vikings. We'll get into that. We'll get into more college football. We'll have a special guest stop by, Sam Munson, one of the best NFL insiders. What does he think about the Falcons? I mean, I think the national media is kind of hesitant, as Maggie Gray joined us earlier from the Infinity Network, and that's